The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. I'm your host, Bill Sickens. Joining me, my co-host Gretchen and Bill. Welcome to the show.
Hello there.
Hello.
So I want to answer something before we get started here, and that is a question on how to find our podcast. And there's been some confusion out there because there's some other shows and different things that use a similar name to what we have. And for some reason, when you put in 2.0, it's tripping up some of the podcast systems. So it doesn't, it just like ignores that. So what you want to search on is User-Friendly the podcast. That term will get you to the right show. Or just go to our website, userfriendly.show, and you can get to it from there. But I just wanted to answer that because a lot of people have been asking, this doesn't sound like what it sounds like, and it's completely different. Why did you change production? We didn't. There's just been some confusion there.
Yes, you don't have to listen to those other people.
Yes. And there you are. So another update that we've had a few questions about, and we're going to be talking about this in a little more depth on next week's show, is Gretchen's book, and we are supposed to get the draft hard copies this week to take a look at and do the final edit on it, and then it will be available for purchase shortly after that. I think it's going to be probably end of March.
Yeah.
Is when you'll actually be able to order them off Amazon and stuff. So anyway, so Gretchen, what are you thinking of all this?
Is it really happening?
Oh, I know. So, it's just, and there's a lot that goes on with this stuff. So to that end, next week, we're also going to have an interview with another local author that's doing a book signing, and we'll dig into that next week's show a little bit more. But definitely, it's kind of getting to that point. So to answer the question, yes, it is still coming. In fact, we are in the very last phases of getting everything done. There will be a website for the book as well, which we'll talk about as soon as it's ready to look at. And you'll be able to figure out how to get it from there. All right, what are we having this week for the news?
Elon Musk sues OpenAI.
Interesting story that's been out there. So, and I didn't actually know a lot of the details on this until I started looking it up. But apparently Musk supplied the money or started OpenAI. And there's a lot of details on that. But he's saying that he wanted it to be run as a nonprofit. Okay. OpenAI has entered into an agreement with Microsoft and is now running pretty much ChatGPT off of Microsoft's servers at Azure. And they're trying to apparently, at least the claim is, closed source the code. And Musk is objecting to that because that was not the original idea. Now, on the other side of it, OpenAI is saying that he wanted absolute control of the company, and that's why they went this other direction. So I'll be interested to see where this goes. They're both referencing some kind of an agreement, a founding agreement, they called it. Mm-hmm. Although if there is one, it hasn't been made public yet. So it's hard to be able to talk about what specifically that might entail. But, I always find these things kind of interesting. Litigation goes forever, but something like this is a little bit different direction. And, Microsoft wants to make GPT-4, what they're calling a default algorithm. Okay. That's the claim. And OpenAI has objected those claims in a staff memo. They didn't address them publicly, though, when we tried to look into that. So, again, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes and which side it ends up being on. And if this was supposed to be a nonprofit, well, maybe Musk is right. And if it wasn't, then maybe OpenAI is right.
Black Cat ransomware turns off servers amid claims they stole $22 million ransom.
All right, so healthcare situation that they attacked here. and the healthcare association that got attacked apparently paid the ransom, from what I understand on this.
Wow.
Optum is the company that got attacked, and they do a lot of different things in the healthcare world, health insurance. You might have heard of them there. They open and own a number of brands and other stuff like that that all follow under this company. Now, some interesting things that came out of this, and I had never heard this term before, but there is now something on the dark web called ransomware as a service, or RaaS. And for programmers or anybody in the technical world, you might have heard these terms, SaaS, software as a service, and RaaS in my world means robot as a service, but not this. So you can actually go to the dark web, go to a website, buy this software or rent it or however they do it, and use it to go from there. So in this case, the ransom was paid, or at least part of it was, and it hasn't been disclosed the exact details on that. And then Black Hat turned off their servers and put up a website that says, we've been captured by the feds, basically. When in fact, that's not the case, but they're trying to make it much more difficult to find them. They've rebranded once before, so this particular organization has a history of doing this. And the other thing that is kind of interesting to put here is the servers that handle paying the ransom, those still work.
Well, there you are. Okay, Apple releases iOS 17.4.
Yeah, so why is this a big deal? I mean, normally something like this would be just okay if you have an iPhone or an iPad. Great, there's a new update. Not something you normally talk about, but this one's a little bit different. If you're in the United States, or actually more appropriately outside of the European Union, you're only going to see a few changes from that. There's some new emoji characters. It supports transcripts for podcasts and the podcast app and some other things. But in the European Union, the update is to deal with a requirement that they now have that if you're in Europe and you have an iPhone, you can now start to install software from something other than Apple. So iTunes is no longer the only source. And again, this is a requirement that they made on that end. Now, this only works in the EU. So even though you're getting the same update outside of the European Union, the functions that are being added there won't be added here. I don't know yet if a VPN will allow you to get around that from outside of the European Union. Something we'll definitely check out. But if you're in the EU, you'll be able to install apps from alternative app marketplaces, install web browsers with alternative browser engines, and it prompts you for your default browser. Now, when you open up Safari, you can change it. And the big one on this that's been a big row is that you now can have payments on things that are not done through the App Store. There's external purchases available. So that's where that's headed. So it's kind of a big deal because of those functions, but only in the European Union, because this has been something that Apple has been fighting. The Android side of things also has some similar things, but hasn't completely or never did lock down so that you could only go through Play Store. So it's a little less intense. On the Apple side, it was there, you couldn't even sideload. I mean, it was difficult. And I know from my own standpoint, because we've written some apps, in doing the testing on this, you couldn't really load an app to test. You still had to get it into a debugging function within the iTunes to be able to even get it onto your device to test. So they really do keep control over that and want to keep it locked down. But if you're in the EU, not so much anymore.
PlayStation reportedly doing a Cyberpunk 2077 for some Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League refunds.
So to give a little bit of background for that, because it was a mouthful, you might remember back when Cyberpunk 2077 came out, it didn't work very well. In fact, on the PC, it was okay. I didn't really run into any big problems, but the console versions of it really didn't work. So it is a very rare thing. They offered refunds for some of this. So that's what this is talking about, because Suicide Squad is apparently even worse. It does not play.
Oh, wow.
And it just doesn't work. And now for anybody that knows the history of Cyberpunk, they did fix it after the fact. And actually now it's pretty rock solid. But it is interesting because PlayStation is not known for doing refunds. In fact, a few years back when the PlayStation Network got hacked and was down for 3 months, they wouldn't even refund the monthly fees for that, and it wasn't available.
Jeez.
So little bit unique here. And the one thing that I do have to say about this, I was trying to do some confirmation on this, and the only place I was able to confirm that somebody had actually managed to get a refund was in the UK. So I don't know how well this works, but you'll have to let us know. If you bought this game and it doesn't work and you try to get a refund, let us know if you actually were able to or what that process was. And I'm sure there's 15 screens in there to try to convince you to buy something else or do something else. That's pretty typical. But yeah, so hopefully they fix the game and hopefully they stop releasing games that don't work.
All right. And apparently smart crime is becoming a thing.
Yeah, interesting situation here. And in a very broad sense, this is nothing new. There's been smart crime for a while now. So it depends on where you're looking at it. And what this has to do with is something that the Los Angeles Police Department is warning about, but we're seeing it in other places where you're starting to have people robbing houses using Wi-Fi jammers. And what that does is that defeats the security cameras. So in other words, your security camera usually uses Wi-Fi to communicate with the base station. So whether it's Ring or, you know, one of those systems that you're using. And so they'll go up to the house, use a device to jam the Wi-Fi, which disables the security cameras, and then they can get around them.
So what exactly happens when they do that? Does it make the camera go blurry?
It would make it stop working. So basically what happens, if you have a Wi-Fi network and you have problems, a lot of times it's kind of not an intentional, but this type of an idea where there's too many signals going on. And what happens is you're overloading the network and the signal can't get through and that type of thing. So in this situation, they're doing it intentionally. So the camera doesn't turn off, but it's unable to transmit to the base station because the signal no longer connects because there's too much going on. And as a result of that, because most of the time recording is done on the cloud on these type of systems, you don't get a video signal and you aren't able to have the information that you would normally get from the video camera.
I see.
Phone screen protectors becoming a thing of the past.
Yeah, you know, interesting little thing here, too. When I remember back when I got my first, when I wasn't a smartphone, it was a 3-com iPad, iPack. And the screens in those were so fragile. I had it, you know, very carefully, made sure nothing happened. And I had it for about 2 years, and finally it was knocked off my desk onto a carpeted floor, and that was enough to shatter the screen. Maybe a foot and a half drop, right? So when smartphones came out, when the iPhone originally came out and Android after that, they had a similar situation. The screen was a little bit better. They were starting to have a product that you may have heard of called Gorilla Glass, but it was still very easy to damage your phone's screen. So screen protectors became, I think it's a $50 billion industry or something now, just this huge thing for these little glass covers. So, of course, when you go buy a phone or when you go online, it's highly recommended that you use a screen protector. Now, with modern phones, they're not anywhere near as capable of being broken. I mean, you certainly can, although we heard about the Alaska Airlines thing when the door fell off in the air at 10,000 feet and somebody's iPhone fell out and it was just fine when they found it on the ground. So that's definitely a little better than my 3-com iPack. But because the screen protectors are so cheap to make and because they can get a premium for them, they're still highly recommended. And they're actually saying now that with the glass being better, and you want to look at this and see what you're actually dealing with in your device, but with the glass being better, you have to normally turn the screen up brighter, so that takes more battery life and lowers the life expectancy of your screen just in general. It's not as responsive, and there's some other things. So if you don't need to have one, it's probably better not to, as long as the device you're using is able to deal with that. Now, the other side of this says, well, of course, you can still get scratches and things. And yeah, that's possible. Yeah. But again, at the end of the day, it is certainly not something that is important. Now, I have a prototype folding phone, which is based on the Samsung Flip 5, and I can't use a screen protector. If I did, it wouldn't close. And the problem screen that's in it's a little bit different. I don't think it would break. So, you know, but just something that's kind of interesting to look at here. I know that in the past, when you go and buy a phone, or at least our experience, Gretchen, you and Jeremy were with us when we did this, is they sell you the phone, and at the end of it, they try to sell you all these accessories, which are 4 to 5 times as much usually as you can get them for online, and they really push it.
Yeah.
And it was like $20 a phone for a screen protector, and you could get a 3-pack on Amazon of basically the same thing for a couple of bucks. So, you know, from that standpoint, definitely upselling. It's just like if you buy a car or something, okay, you've just bought your car now. Would you like the paint, you know, sealed or something? They have all these different upgrades, and it's that same kind of an idea. So I don't think they want it to go away because it's one more thing that they can sell. But on the same token, it's something that is becoming not as necessary. So from my own standpoint, I don't use a screen protector anymore because I can't. But even so, I think it is definitely something to think about. And maybe on your next phone, it's not going to be necessary.
All right. Waste management deadline approaching. So what exactly is this?
Okay. So from my understanding, there was a data breach with the company Waste Management. Waste Management is a large nationwide company that does trash hauling, among other things. And they're in a lot of different areas. And the cyber attack was between January 21st and 23rd. Details of this can be found on their website or just searching Waste Management Settlement. Be eligible. You would have probably have gotten a letter, but not everybody did. There's a phone number you can call to check and see if you are eligible. It's 877-793-4157. And the deadline is coming right up here on March 14th. So if this is something that you might have had an issue with, or even if you want to just see if you qualify for a settlement, time is running out. And the interesting thing about it is this is one of the higher payments that I've seen on these class action things. It's $750 to $3,750, depending on what happened. So that might be why they have such a short deadline, but definitely something to check out. And we'll go ahead and throw that phone number up on our social media. So if you need it, you can get it from there as well.
AI prompt engineering is dead.
Yes, isn't that dramatic? Dun, dun, dun.
I'm not sure I understand what it is. So can you give me...
What this is referring to is when you... it's used in other places too, but the place you probably would have encountered this kind of technology is when you go on to get support through a chat, like through a website or something, mm-hmm. and you go on and what's your name? Okay, what's your problem? And you put it in. And the first part of that is usually not an actual person. It's a prompt.
Oh.
So what that is it's designed so that they make it as difficult as possible for you to actually talk to a human. And on the other side of it, because I say that in a very negative way, because it does feel like if the other side of it is something like 80% of the questions people ask from support are the same and can be answered in this way, and it's faster and cheaper. Okay. So in line with all of this, prior to generative AI coming on the scene last year, there was programmers that would sit down and try to figure out what prompts to give back. In other words, prompt engineering. And this is moving now more towards AI running it where you can have an actual conversation. So that's changing a little bit, hence the idea that AI prompt engineering is dead. Now, like with so many things, it seems like these deaths are carried out a little bit. I don't think this is going to go away anytime soon. But I do have to say that using the screening process with AI does seem to give better results than the other ones where they tried to pre-guess essentially everything that somebody might ask and give an answer for it. And some of the larger companies like Amazon, I think, should take a lesson from this, because if you go on to some of these places and request help, it puts you through everything possible, including sometimes it feels like standing on your head to actually get to somebody.
And I'm not the kind of person who's going to ask what everybody else asks.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, leave me alone. Just answer the damn phone.
And it is. And sometimes, you know, I've figured out on a lot of these things, you can type operator or something of that nature. Sometimes that will work. It doesn't on Amazon and it doesn't with the IRS. There is actually websites that will give you a flow chart of how to get through their systems for both Amazon and the IRS and probably others and actually talk to somebody. The IRS is the most convoluted one I've ever seen. And this is not online, but for their phone tree, but it's the same kind of a system where you have to go through all this stuff and kind of know this magic process or it will not do what you want. And, you know, so from that kind of a standpoint, it's interesting to see where that's gotten drug out to. But yeah,
so it is definitely. Is it run by Patty and Selma?
Yeah, you know, it feels like it. For anybody that hasn't seen The Simpsons, check out Patty and Selma. But yeah, it's also for anybody that hasn't seen The Simpsons, buy a television. But 35 years, 36 years now. So yeah,
something like that.
Something like that. It's been around for a very, very long time. So anyway, another question that we have been getting is the whole idea of the term quiet quitting. And there's other variations of this. And so we just thought we'd take a minute here and kind of answer that. We talk about technology jobs, and this is relevant in that kind of a standpoint because there's been a lot of churn in the tech market lately, a lot of layoffs, but it's still a market that you want to work in, and getting a job is, they're still very much out there, even though a lot of things are changing around. So what the term actually refers to is the idea of someone going to work, doing just what's required, not going above and beyond or really having any motivation. They just kind of go in and do the moves that they're required to do. And from that standpoint, they're, you know, in the process of quiet quitting. So you're not saying you're quitting, but you're quietly not doing anything above what you absolutely have to do your job. And this is going in multiple directions because that's one side. Well, there's quiet firing where they don't fire you, the place you're looking for, but they make things very difficult. There's, you're not going to get any kind of certainly a bonus or anything or any accolade. And they might make the job a little more difficult and that type of thing. So they're not firing you, but they are kind of giving the idea, you know? So that's where this term comes from. I don't think these things are really that new.
No.
But I do think that it is something we're starting to see a lot more as things churn and the whole job market changes. And right now where we are, by the way, with technology jobs, because this is definitely something that there's a lot of concern about, is we're seeing in the news a lot of the bigger companies over the last year, year and a half have been laying off a lot of technical people. In that line, we monitor here Monster, Indeed, and these other sites for looking for jobs. And I will still tell you there's plenty out there. And from people I know that have needed to look for a job, they haven't really had any trouble finding one. There's still a lot of need for people that understand technology. So the layoffs have not really made the job market tough or anything like that, but it has definitely made it very different. So the way that you deal with stuff now is different from even a couple of years ago. One of the things to be prepared for is your resume, especially among bigger companies, or if you're dealing with an agency, are going to be looked at by AI before they're ever looked at by a human. So
I think they've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah, it's well, and the thing of it is as AI is getting better, the ability to understand the applications are getting better. So one of the issues that I know a lot of our listeners have run into is things like, how do you do a resume? And everybody you talk to has a different answer to that question on what's actually correct. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Have you guys experienced that?
Oh, yeah. It goes back to when Jeremy was hunting for jobs and things and used to drive him crazy. And it drove me crazy because one person would say, do it this way, and that way is horrible. And then you do it that way. And then you show it to the next person. They go, oh, no, you're doing it all wrong. You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and basically that's what we have. Bill, have you run into this?
To a degree, but mine was over longer terms, you know, of college going, oh, this is how you should do it versus high school, how you should do it versus, you know, looking it up online as to how to do it.
Yep.
You know, but just kind of navigating through all this stuff. One thing, if you do use a service like a Monster and Indeed, they format it for you when you set up your account. So that does get around some of that. But, you know, things are maybe getting a little bit better. We'll see. All right. Next segment, we're going to be talking AI. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Check out our website, userfriendly.show. It is your one stop for looking up back episodes, reading the articles, looking at Tech Wednesday. We even have a smart speaker flash briefing that you can subscribe to. All that's on the website, as well as where to get us on all of the major podcast networks and the ability to send in your questions and your comments. Definitely want to hear from you. Again, userfriendly.show. Check it out. Let us know what you think. All right, guys. Well, We have a guest who's going to be talking AI here in just a moment. And last week, I know we talked a little bit about kind of where this is going and some of the issues dealing with a lot of especially creative people and that type of thing. And he is somebody that has been in the industry for a very long time and kind of is going to give us a little bit of a candid, I would say, definition of some of the things that are going on and a lot of good information. But with generative AI coming onto the scene as much as it is, and it's something to keep in mind, is artificial intelligence is not a new technology. And it is not a technology that was invented in 2022 or 2023. But what has happened, it's been developed to a point where you can now chat or talk just like we are with the computer. And that situation has kind of changed the way it's perceived in many ways. Plus, it is getting a lot more powerful in what it can do and how it can do it. So questions come up dealing with, is my job safe? Is your job safe? Most likely. Is it going to change? Yeah, what you're going to do is going to change. And I think that is where this really kind of comes into it. And our guest dives into that a little bit for us. And we'll kind of go over that. So, you know what? With no further ado, let's go ahead and go to our interview. Joining us now is guest Kevin Cerace. Kevin, welcome to the show. Before you jump on here, I'm going to just kind of read your CV here. Silicon Valley innovator, serial entrepreneur, CEO, TV personality, and edutainer. My goodness, welcome to the show.
Yeah, so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I know we're going to talk a little bit about AI today, so let's just dive right into that with how and where is AI impacting us today?
Well, hopefully it's impacting already everybody listening. Surprisingly, though, when I speak to audiences around the country and around the world, it's surprising how many people have not done anything in Gen AI. I mean, the thing is we've had AI. We've been working with AI for decades. I've been working with AI for decades. I'm somewhat known as the father of the virtual assistant. So did that work in the late 90s. All of that technology got licensed to become Siri and Alexa and everything else. And what's neat about Gen AI is for the first time, you don't need to be a coder to interface and get something back from AI. You just speak to it in English and it talks to you back in English. That has scared a lot of people because computers haven't really spoken English very well as far as people knew. We certainly did in the 90s, right? Our virtual assistants did, but people weren't used to that. So I think it's fascinating. And the ability to construct sentences out of a knowledge base of a trillion phrases, let's say, is absolutely fascinating. So I think this transformer model that is the basis of generative AI today, certainly large language models, has become fascinating and impactful. And we're seeing everyone from coders be 55% more productive. That is from Microsoft, by the way, who makes great products. I just want to note that.
And absolutely.
Absolutely. And we see people in marketing, for example, people who were writing blog posts could be 10, 20, 30, 50, potentially 100 times more productive than they were before, which is fascinating. And, people like yourselves doing podcasts can now have a podcast summarized by Gen AI, which does a fabulous job at it. So it's speech to text, Gen AI summarization comes back. Some of that is already built into the platforms that like we're using today. That's a game changer, right? Not everyone uses it, but if you use it, that is saving you a lot of time, gives you more time on air per se.
And you know, something, I'm going to just throw this in here because accessibility is a big thing, obviously, you know. So you want to be able to put out like what we're doing here on air or podcast or however you're listening to this. In many ways, it's as many people can get to it. And I know we're already using AI to do the transcripts. So you can go on and get a transcript of what's said. And, you know, like you say, it is very accurate. It's very nice. And it's not, you know, that it's taken away from somebody. It's a feature that we didn't have that we do now that we wouldn't if it wasn't for AI.
Hey, look, there are things that people are doing today. Certainly, I use a variety of Gen AI tools. I use all the pro tools, so GPT-4 and Gemini Pro and whatever. Stable Diffusion and Midjourney, et cetera. What's interesting is, I'll give you an example. I keynote speak 30 or 40 times, 50 times a year sometimes, right? I'm in front of organizations. I customize that talk for that organization. It could be on disruptive innovation. It could be on AI. It could be on a topic that's near and dear to me called joy equals success. And so I'm often creating custom graphics. Now, what I used to do is either go to Illustrator and Photoshop and create them generally poorly, or try to create them, say, within PowerPoint or Keynote poorly, or hire an illustrator for about $1,000, and over a couple of weeks, for that $1,000, I'd get some things and put them in the presentation. Now, I literally go to one of the image generators, describe highly accurately what I want, get several choices, and I'm done in under a minute. Now, I've gone from 3 weeks, two, 3 weeks to a minute, and I've gone from $1,000 to, in essence, free, right? $1. So we're talking about a 1,000x increase in productivity, in my own productivity, doing that simple task, and my presentations look better. And everyone who's listening to this has to do a presentation once in a while. So you have to open your mind to this. And lastly, Microsoft has added added in a GPT-4 connection for Copilot in PowerPoint. So in fact, you can get PowerPoint now to generate graphics and generate layouts for you that you couldn't do a year ago. And so why not take advantage of these amazing tools, you know, like we do Excel? We don't think of it as a math, you know, tool anymore. It's what we do. We go to Excel, we do the spreadsheet, we do our math, whatever, right? It's a fascinating time.
You know, interesting kind of footnote on the PowerPoint thing too, just something I had experienced with, is you actually can be in front of an audience with that, not have a slide, request it, and have the slide on the fly while you're talking. So, you know, that was interesting. So, you know, that's where we're at now, and this has kind of become disruptive. Where do you think we're going? What's the impact over the coming years at home, at work? Are we going to see this continue to grow, and where is it going to grow?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to go back to every single technology that came around and impacted us, from the wheel. Okay, the minute the wheel showed up, those who embraced the wheel did very well, by the way. Those who didn't embrace the wheel and say, this is not for me, they probably died a pauper, right? So, right. So this is true with Excel. This is true with the desktop PC. It is true when we got smartphones. There's some people we knew who said, I'm never getting a smartphone. I've got my BlackBerry little thing here, and that, you know, and they quickly fell behind and had to get a smartphone, right? It's true with the internet. It's true with every technology. And so people need to look at Gen AI and where Gen AI is going, which I'll talk about in a second, as it's here to stay. You're going to use it, or you could choose to be retired and left behind. That's fine, right? And that's a personal choice. But if you're not using it, you are left behind. No different than someone coming into finance today and saying, you know, I still do math by hand. I don't use those fancy spreadsheets. Well, nobody would hire you. And 2-3 years from now, if you came in to a marketing department, in fact, if you came in to do a podcast, and you said, well, I never touched those Gen AI tools. I would never use anything that generates images, and I would never, or photographs or text or summarizes text or any of that, or even analyzes my spreadsheets or analyzes a case study or analyze. I would never use any of that. I'm going to do it all by hand. No one will hire you. It's a given. So embrace the technologies. So a couple of things. Look, Gen AI in a transformer model was never meant to be accurate on every fact. It is trained in an unsupervised way, meaning it doesn't know the difference between fact and fiction. It wasn't supposed to. It's just supposed to put sentences together. And it does put sentences together better than we can. Right? I can't write such beautiful prose. It may or may not be accurate, but it's a sentence. And it's so, if you look at this as a force multiplier of your brain, but like you have 100 assistants around you, but they're not all correct, but they will give you something to stew on. Then you say, hey, I can ask this anything. So for instance, I can ask it, where should I go to dinner? I can ask it, where should I go on vacation next year, and plan it out for me, right? I can ask it, how might I build, literally, I did this last week for a group I was speaking to, how might I build an ethanol plant that takes natural gas as an input? What equipment do I need? What does the process look like? It turns out it did an exceptionally good job. Now, I can also say, what are the top 10 topics for the next 2 weeks for a podcast I'm doing? You will not take all 10, but all 10 will be interesting, and 3 or 4 of them will be things you would not have thought of. And when people look at this assistant in that way, it's brilliant. Last one. Got an argument with my spouse this morning. I'm at work. Before you respond an email, which you've been stewing on for the last hour as you drove to work and got there, trust me, if you want to save your marriage, ask the ChatGPT. Say, here's what I was told. Here's what he or she said to me. They're very angry. What should I say back in response that will build my marriage stronger rather than tear it down in 1 minute and make us not speak to each other? And the advice it will give you is brilliant. You may or may not use it all, but it's brilliant. And it'll give you a whole bunch of ideas. And frankly, what it asks you to, what it generally tells you to write back in an email is, you are right. I am wrong. I am terribly sorry. I'll make up for it and I'll do the dishes every day for the next 3 weeks or something, you know, something to really just mea culpa. I'm going to take all the blame. You're completely right. Because the goal is to save the marriage, not to be right. But as humans, we want to be right. So it's even good for advice like that.
No, actually, that totally makes sense. So I'm going to preface something before our next question here. And just to kind of tie into what we're talking about from before, you've mentioned writing articles and that type of thing. And I've used this and it seems to do well. I do think that it's important that you read what it writes before you publish it. One of the other issues, a few weeks back, we were talking about something with Dungeons and Dragons, the role-playing game. They had put out a new book and had clearly used AI when they said they hadn't, and the pictures were a little skewed. So again, right now it seems like we're in a place where it's an assistant, but it's not a replacement. So let me just throw this out at you. Going forward, what jobs are safe and what do you think is going to change on that line?
Well, look, already I'm using it to illustrate things instead of hiring an illustrator. In fact, I will still need an illustrator once in a while where I cannot describe something accurately in English for a model to generate it. So illustrators, difficult. Photographers, look, I can create today absolutely photographic, realistic images, and I can take you, Bill, and put you in a place you've never been. Now you go, well, why would I want to do that? Well, it could be for a presentation, but how about if you're a model? How about if you're a model and you do not have time to go out and do that shoot in Alaska, but instead I want to take my likeness and generate 50 versions of me in Alaska in a variety of different clothing. Okay. Already a model did that, by the way, got paid for it, right? Still her likeness, didn't have to fly to Alaska to do it. So I think photography could be challenged. I think, you know, if you're in marketing, you know, a blog writer, of which there were many people just wrote blog posts, that is a challenged place to be in, right? We don't have enough coders. So the fact that coders are 55% more productive is actually good, because we need more coders rather than less. I think if you're an area that I'm working in, if you're in software quality assurance and all you do is write scripts, I think that job is gone very soon. Because what you're really doing is you're taking test cases that were written in English and you're converting those to code. But we have an English description that's extremely accurate of the code I want to write. So no question, with a lot of technology around it, Gen AI can be part of that understanding of the natural language and converting that code, right? Jobs that are safe. You might laugh. Plumber, HVAC repair person. The complexity of using any kind of AI and combining it with robotics to come to your house and find the plumbing problem when every house is different, it's too much noise. It's too noisy. It'll cost billions of dollars. The plumber and the HVAC. And by the way, if you've asked for a plumber lately and you need one this afternoon, at about $250, they'll show up, you know, depending on where you are in the country. And you go, when did it become $250 to clear a pipe or fix whatever it is? Well, that's the demand and the supply are out of whack and going to continue to be so, because more are retiring than are coming in. So that's a job that AI is not going to do well. And they're the exact jobs that, you know, we were pushing people towards in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And then by the 70s, we said, everybody go to college, become a programmer. And now we realize, hold it, we have no one to do our plumbing and our HVAC repair. So there's my thoughts, very quick thoughts in, you know, just a few minutes, that of where there's jobs and where there aren't. A lot of the content generation kinds of jobs, I think, are at great risk.
And I agree with you. I like it when the lights work and the water works. You know, those are just little details that are kind of nice for modern life.
They are, but when people are retiring from those businesses faster than anyone coming. Here's another thing. I've spoken to a lot of, you know, industry groups, right? You go to the, you know, the National Plumbing Association conference. I'm there to speak on AI, but I have to speak on a real big problem, which is a labor problem they have. And you know what the big problem, plumbing, HVAC, kitchen equipment repair, things like that, is they can't find people who have the mechanical sense where they can train them to do the work. And yeah, that's because this generation of young people grew up playing video games, not repairing cars. And the generation that repaired cars probably grew up in the 40s, 50s, 60s, even the 70s. And after that, video games came along. So they don't know the difference. You know, a lot of 21-year-olds, I'm picking on it, some I'm going to get yelled at, but, you know, don't know the difference between a motor and an engine and a generator and an alternator. I don't know. They're all things that exist. So you can't send them into a restaurant and say, repair the sous vide, because otherwise they can't make the 250 lobster tails for the conference tonight. They don't know what a sous vide is, number one. Number two, they don't know how to take the front of the or the back off. And when they do, they don't know the parts that are inside. But any of us who grew up long enough ago, of course we can guess, you know, there's a heater element, there's a thermostat. That's probably it. There's probably not much, right? I mean, I got to heat water to a certain temperature. This can't be that hard. But you don't fundamentally know how those things are built. So we have a real serious issue in this country of who's going to do that kind of work. And it's not AI.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm ready for a robot showing up to clean the pipes anyway, but you know, if given the choice, but yeah, I see where you're, I see where you're going with that. So no, it totally does make sense. So on the thing of how things work, how does this AI stuff actually work?
Sure. Well, there's AI, and Gen AI is a type of AI, but I'll talk to Gen AI for a second. It's literally what's called a transformer model. It was built for language translation, and it was built at Google in 2017 originally, who published the paper on it. It was brilliant work that said, basically, we think we have enough compute horsepower now to, instead of translate word for word into, say, from English to French. And when you translate word for word English to French, of course, it's a mangled French sentence for those of us who know any French. And now the French understood it, but they also understood you were using a dumb translator on your phone that didn't understand the phrase or the sentence. And they had a great idea that said, why don't we just learn phrases and then we'll translate the phrase to French or Spanish or whatever it is. And once you could learn phrases, then you could step back and say, well, if I learn all the phrases in the English language, which is, who knows, billions, trillions of potential phrases, I could do more than just translate. I could answer questions about it, right? And I could put phrases back together in the same language or a different language. And that's how we got this transformer model. And it is a deep learning model that has built a huge model out of trillions of phrases. And so it's really looking to rebuild sentences out of the building blocks based on the prompt. So if I said, today is Bill's birthday, what should you say? And I'm saying that ChatGPT, it's going to look at all the words it could start with, and it's going to start with happy, because that comes up, you know, statistically more often as the first word. And then the second word is birthday. It's not going to be, you know, happy record day. It's not going to be happy podcast day. It's happy birthday. And then probably Bill after that. That would be the construction of the sentence based on the probability or the statistics of it seeing all of those words together in the past. Make sense? So it's already seen sentences like that. It's seen it come over and over and over again. It knows how to build that sentence based on the prompt in. Now it makes mistakes, because for a while I could ask it, who shot George Washington? And it would say William Tryon shot George Washington, which is only true in a fictional novel. But it is true in a fictional novel that William Tryon shot George Washington. It not knowing fiction from fact, it's you know, it's completing a sentence accurately given that prompt. One could have further prompted it and said, is this within a novel, or is it within, you know, where did you read this? Turns out it also appeared in the New York Times. So there's some complexity of who was reviewing the novel, right? There's some complexity in understanding what's fact and fiction. But that said, that's how it's built. And of course, they're getting more sophisticated. Now there's new models coming along. They're looking at generative AI, both in language and images, in sort of new ways. But there's the basic building blocks for the last basically 7 years.
So I'm going to go a little different direction with this next question, because we've been getting a lot of listener questions in from people that are legitimately concerned about this, kind of the direction of the Terminator or something. Do you see in the next few, I mean, is generative AI going to ultimately kill off all regular humans? Are we going to be cyborgs in 10 years with AI built in? Where do you think it's going down? And to bring that back to the realm of seriousness, do people need to actually worry about that kind of an outcome?
Oh, no. You know what's funny? Here's the funny thing is I think that people look at these things, and because we're interacting in English now, they get very scared that this thing, which appears to be smarter than me, and by the way, Excel's been smarter than me in math, right? So this isn't the first time something came around, it was smarter. But they look at it and say, if you take this incredibly smart thing and hook it to the wrong things, it could take over the world. Well, first of all, it doesn't think for itself at all. It takes in prompts, right? Where I'm in charge of the prompt and I tell it what to do. It doesn't conceive of its own things to do, first of all. Second of all, right now they're not basically hooked to the physical world. They can't do anything. Number three, clearly do not take ChatGPT and hook it to the nuclear arsenal. Right, this is a bad idea, right? Don't do stuff like that. So you have to be smart. But right now, ChatGPT runs on Azure at Microsoft, and you could literally pull the plug out.
Interesting. I think that's a good point to think about. All right, how does somebody get a hold of you? Give us your website, social media, anything you'd like to put out there.
Yeah, it's just kevinserace.com. That's the website. You can find me there, and there's my LinkedIn and Twitter and all that stuff there. So ways to contact me.
Sounds great. Anything else you want to tell us?
Nope. I think, you know, these are always great questions. The ones people have, I would say it's the best time to be alive ever, because we've never seen so much progress in technology, so much impact in our lives. So use it and have a ball.
All right, Kevin, thank you so much.
Yes.
Some great information there. Now, next week, we're going to have another guest on that's going to talk a little bit more about AI and give maybe a little bit different perspective. It's interesting to see where everybody is kind of coming from with all this stuff. We talked about it again last week. And, you know, guys, I don't know. I think there are a lot of different directions this could go as we go on down the road. And I think some of them are positive and some of them maybe not so much.
Like with any new technology, there's going to be a lot of good things and a few bad things.
Yeah.
And I think that is definitely where all of this is at. So, you know, it's one of the reasons why we're kind of deep diving into this a little bit, because it is definitely something that's a part of our lives now. And most of us have experienced it. Even if you don't know that you did, you probably already have in some ways interacting with businesses and different things like that. So, you know, last week you got our perspective, this week Kevin's, and next week we'll save who it is and all that is a little bit of a surprise, but he's going to be talking about this from a little bit of a different direction. And really at the end of the day, from the research that I've been able to do, it looks like all of the information we're getting is pretty much correct. It just is kind of where and how it applies and how we're going to deal with it. So then until next week, this is User-Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
Hey, everybody. This is Bill Snodgrass. Join User Friendly in supporting the people of the Ukraine with President Zelensky's United 24 campaign. Help is needed with healthcare, demining, and many, many other things. You decide where your support goes. Go to userfriendly.show and click the Ukrainian flag at the bottom of the homepage for more information.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2013 to 2024 by User Friendly Media Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Opinions expressed on the show are those of the hosts and guests and not this radio station. Please check out userfriendly.show for airtimes and podcasts.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.